Hello everyone, I'm Tom Regan, a licensed addiction counselor and a certified grief counselor for Heartview Foundation in Bismarck. And welcome to Recovery Chronicles on KDAC Radio. This program celebrates recovery with a capital R, I hope. And our guests are people in recovery, usually people in long-term recovery. And our guest today is Joseph Johnner. A fellow that I've known for quite a while now. And Joseph, if you don't mind, give us a little bit about your background, your growing up years. Where are you from?
I was born in Bismarck and lived in Bismarck for about 5 years until my parents divorced. After that, moved to Linton. My dad owned a construction company, moved to Linton, and grew up down there. Grew up there, stayed there till I was about 17.
How old are you?
I'm 36.
Okay. A young man, and as everybody knows, a person in recovery. What were your drugs of choice?
It started with alcohol. Alcohol ended up leading into marijuana, and it was marijuana for not that long, and then eventually it became coke and meth.
Yeah, and the way we usually ask questions is, how bad did it get, and then what happened, and then what is your life like now? So how bad did your addiction get? Was it getting you in trouble, for example?
Oh, most definitely. It got me in legal trouble drinking. It started as a juvenile, I guess. You know, I was in it was called CIS at the time, but it's called YCC now. I was there twice, and I was also at a place called Southwest Keys. And I ended up going to prison because of my alcoholism. And after I was released, after 5 years, I was in and out of jail probably at least a couple dozen times. And how bad did it get? It got to the point where never suicidal, but didn't care if I lived or died.
Yeah.
And pretty much burned every bridge that I crossed, you know.
Yeah.
Even probably before I crossed it, got to the point where, you know, people always say they hit rock bottom. Yeah, I was in the basement of rock bottom, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I met you, through a group called RAD,
right?
Runners Against Destructive Decisions, which meets here in Bismarck. And I found out pretty quickly how committed you were to recovery, and I found out pretty quickly that you were on the right path. And so what made the difference? I mean, when did you see the light, so to speak?
Well, in all honesty, it was my little daughter, Jersey. I tried to have her with my then girlfriend at the time, you know, and she gave me a reason to live. She gave me a reason to want to be a better person, you know. I really believe that I had the world's best dad, you know. There was over 400 people at my dad's funeral when he passed away, coming from Linton, of a town of 1,400 people. That's a lot of people for a small little community, you know. And I always said that if I could be half the dad to my daughter that my dad was to me, she would have the world's second best dad.
Wow.
So from that point on, I wanted to be a better person, be a better father, and just be a good person all around in general.
Mm.
Yeah. And
was there any one incident or any one event that kind of changed you?
Well, to be honest with you, it wasn't overnight. It took probably at least a good year of struggling and trying to get sober. I checked myself into treatment twice. I was committed as well, and I never really believed in a higher power. You know what I mean? And my then counselor, he passed away since then. He kind of explained to me, like, I never believed at all, period, you know. And you know, they always say in treatment, it's not a religious thing. It's a spiritual thing, they say, you know what I mean? And I said, you know, it's just because I don't believe, does that mean I can't be sober? And the way he broke it down to me, he said, you know what? He said, as much as you love your little girl, he said, love, you know, I would do anything for her. And, you know, love is, or higher power is anything that you believe greater that's greater than yourself, you know, mm-hmm. And it serves a bigger purpose than you. And so my love for my daughter is definitely my higher power and stuff like that, you know, and it just, it grew from there, you know, mm-hmm. It grew from there.
Yeah, that's great advice. And I liked what you said about religion versus spirituality. And one of my favorite sayings is religion is for people who are afraid to go to hell, and spirituality is for people who have been there. And I think what's meant by that, and I don't think that saying is meant to criticize anyone who goes to church or anything like that. I think it's meant to say, and that saying came out of 12-step groups. And I think what they mean by that is most of us who have been in the throes of addiction, and I'm a person in long-term recovery, we have been to hell and back, you know. Spirituality is for people who have been there. And, you know, if you've never been an addict, it's hard to describe to a non-addict, you know, the hell of having lost all hope, for example, you know. So
I don't think it's really that hard to describe. I just don't think that they're able to understand it. I mean, we can describe it, you know, to the T, because we've been through it, you know what I mean? It's I think it's easy to describe. It's just if you're not an addict, it's hard to understand that, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, how do you describe it? And I know you're doing some speaking nowadays too, but how do you describe addiction or being in the grips of addiction?
Well, obviously, I think it's evil, but I mean, it's more than just evil. I mean, it's you have absolute no control or no, even you lose all your desire to even want to be make a good decision or be a good person. I mean, it's mm-hmm. It comes to the point where you really don't care about anything but your next fix or your next high or your next drunk, and it literally is. It's hell. I mean, it's that's exactly what it is. I mean, there's just no better way to describe it than that. You know what I mean? I mean, if that's how I would describe it.
Yeah. So you've been in recovery for a good long time now. And you have had some pretty long periods of recovery. Has it gotten any easier? Does it get easier?
I think, in all actuality, I mean, it does get easier. You know, the longer you're in recovery, and the more committed you are to it. You know, as long as that desire, that drive is there, it does get easier. You know, I mean, you start forming new habits. That's the main thing. I mean, you got to change everything. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. when you're addicted to anything, it's you got to change your whole lifestyle. You got to change the people you hang out with. You got to change your habits. I mean, you got to change absolutely everything. I think, you know, addiction takes up about 90% of a person's life from the time, or from either whether it's they're trying to make money to buy drugs or selling drugs or looking for the drugs and then actually using the drugs, and then the time they spend under the influence, and then the time they spend sleeping or recovering, and then going through withdrawals and everything. It takes up about 90% of your life. So I mean, if a person really wants to be sober, they have to change their habits. They have to change. They got to know what their triggers are, and that's a huge thing, you know. And you, that's something really not to flirt with or not to mess around with, you know.
Yeah. You mentioned the term triggers. What have you recognized as some of your triggers or some of the things that used to trigger your use in the past?
Definitely, music for me is one. Like
Interesting. And
it's not a type or a style of a song or music. It's certain songs in particular. And I've listened to so many songs under the influence that if I hear those same songs, it takes me right back to that. I mean, literally, I want to use, you know what I mean? So I just know well enough to stay mm-hmm. completely away. I don't even turn the radio on. If I do, it's usually Christian music or something like mm-hmm. that, you know?
No.
And another trigger is people. I mean, people that I used to either sell to or buy from or use with. I mean, that's a huge thing. You know, I mean, if you run into them in passing, say hi, whatever, that's fine. But as far as like hanging out with, at certain places with people, I mean, that's a huge no-no, you know?
You hear the expression, people, places, and things.
Right.
Those are that's what you have to change. And as you know, Joseph, I'm an addiction counselor, and we're talking to Joseph Johnner is our guest today, who lives in the Bismarck Mandan area. When our patients relapse or slip is another word, and they use for a day or two, or when we ask them why, so often the response is, well, it was there. or my friend came over and they had it. And so it was in front of me. Right? I mean, it's...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That compulsion can be strong.
Yeah, and that goes back to finding new friends, finding new habits and new friends. I mean, anybody that you used to associate with using, I mean... Even if they're family, I mean, you got to keep your distance. I mean, you're flirting with disaster. You know, that's a chance that if a person really wants to be sober, that's a chance that they shouldn't be willing to take. In my opinion, I guess, you know.
And we call that establishing boundaries,
right,
between you and friends or family members or whatever. I didn't tell you I was going to bring this up, but I know you just told me that you lost your grandmother here very, very recently, within the last couple of days. How does that affect your recovery, your sobriety, your spirituality, perhaps?
Definitely. I see things differently. I mean, I lost, the reason why I got into some harder drugs was after I lost my dad. And that was just a few weeks after I lost him. You know, I started, you know, drinking. I was drinking. And when you drink, you're still able to feel, you know what I mean? If anything, it magnifies, multiplies your emotions, you know? So I wanted to numb out. So I ended up turning something harder, which was drugs and meth and coke, you know? And, you know, so I lost my dad. You know, a couple of years after I lost my dad, I lost my mom. And then 9 months after I lost my mom, I lost my only brother. So, and that was, you know, pre-God, pre-Jesus, you know. And so I took it really hard. You know, I was in a dark place at that time. And that's why I turned to drugs, you know. But since then, I mean, I found God. And, you know, the whole thing with my grandma is that I know, obviously, for one, you know, she wouldn't want me to be using in the first place, you know. But I've when a person establishes a certain amount of time or sobriety, you know, you kind of, you don't want to let it go to waste. You know what I mean?
You protect it.
Exactly. You know, and I got so much invested in that already. And the life and the things, all the things that I've been blessed with since I've been sober, it's just something that I'd never thought in a million years that I would be living this type of life or doing the things that I'm doing now. And I mean, I truly am blessed. And it's just something that, to be honest with you, I really haven't even thought about it. You know, the old me, I would have been high right away. You know what I mean? But now it's just, I've come too far and it's too much. I just don't want to risk it, you know?
That's a wonderful message. And say, hey, look, you're on the radio now. You know, talking about recovery, talking about your life. And I know inspiring others. And I know you've been doing quite a bit of public speaking. If you want to talk about some of that, or maybe some of the places you've spoken at, and how does that make you feel, and what does that do for you in your recovery?
You know, they say when you're in recovery, I mean, helping others helps you in recovery. It really does. You know,
and they
mean?
Say in order to keep it, you have to give it away.
Right. Exactly. I mean, it kind of sounds, I don't know what the word is.
Corny.
Well, no, but I mean, it's true. I mean, it really, you get so much gratification out of helping somebody else, you know what I mean? And just for the fact that a person could be, or myself could be an inspiration to somebody, or that gleam of hope. I know there's people that I've, you know, friends of mine, old using friends or whatever, that like whenever I'd look at them, I would picture, I could never see them being sober. But then when they got sober, you know, it really changed, you know, messed with my mind. I was thinking, you know what, this person who I always thought would be under the influence would never do anything, and they're being sober, if they can do that, I can definitely do that. You know what I mean? So it's to be that example and to have that sense of accountability is a big thing. You know what I mean? I don't want to be a hypocrite. You know, that's another thing, you know, but the main thing is the speaking. I never really, that wasn't something that I wanted to do or tried to do. It's just, you know, but that was offered to me or I was asked to do that. And I really think that, you know, if there's anything that I can do to help out, I've always been the type of person since I was a kid to help people and want to help people, you know what I mean? And not for anything in return, maybe a thanks at most, but you know what? If I can help steer somebody from going down the road that I did, or if there's somebody that we have a similar past or similar history, you know, maybe I could help them to help them understand that it just ain't worth it, man. It's not worth it. I mean, it's time is probably, you know, it's probably the most valuable thing and most precious thing. And all the time that you spend under the influence, drunk, high, or whatever, that's time you ain't ever going to get back, man. You know what I mean? And that was one thing that I was thinking about my grandma, you know, I was looking back at her life, you know, and, you know, instead of being sad about that she's gone and this and that, you know what, you know, I'm blessed to have a grandma as good as she was, you know what I mean? She was a social worker and she helped a lot of people out. And, she never drank or nothing like that. So when she looked back at her life, she doesn't sit there and have any regrets like, oh, I spent this time drunk or high. Like, yeah. I can never say that. You know what I mean? I can work from that point on forward. You know what I mean? And it's just, you know, everything happens for a reason. You know, everything happens for a reason. And maybe my reason is to help people. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And you can stay sober, or you can keep on building your recovery and remain in recovery in her memory, in her honor, because right. you know what she wants for you or would have wanted for you. And so, who have you been working with as far as giving speeches or presentations? Well, I know we want to have you at Heartview to right. speak to our patients.
And I'd love to yes. speak at Heartview. And,
but I think, didn't you say you were out at UMary the
yeah,
other day?
Yeah, I just spoke at UMary last week, Tuesday. You know, I've been working with Ministry on the Margins and also
Sister Kathleen and
Sister Idale.
I thought you and I talked about the Native American Development Center.
Yeah, I'm also working with the director of the Native American Development Center as well. Mm-hmm. And trying to get to be a mentor. Yeah. You know what I mean? I just filled out an application to be a mentor there. I spoke at UMary last week. I got to share my story about how I started using and when and just my life story and everything else. And since then, I was asked to return, and they wanted to make it like a regular thing.
Nice.
And also was asked to if I could have my story recorded for was it a podcast?
Okay. And this will be available on podcast.
Nice.
On the KDAC websites. And I should remind people we're talking to Joseph Johnner from who grew up in Linton, who grew up right. in Linton and now from the Bismarck Mandan area. So, there are people listening to this radio program, Joseph, and of course it's heard on Tuesday mornings and then repeated on Saturday mornings, but who already know that they're in trouble, if you know what I mean. You know, they know that they've got a problem. They might even know that they are addicts or alcoholics. Or what's your best advice?
If they
want to change, what would you advise them to do?
If they want to change, I mean,
yeah.
My best advice is the time is now.
Yeah.
The time is right now. No. It's not 5 minutes from now. It's not tomorrow or maybe next week. It's right now. Because the thing is that you might not make it till tomorrow. I mean, you could be in a jail cell tonight. You could be in the morgue tonight. And that's the thing. I mean, with this disease, I mean, you don't know. I mean, the thing is, it doesn't discriminate against anybody, regardless of your intellect or
race.
Your race, exactly, religion. Or religion or your financial status or your strength. I mean, it doesn't discriminate, you know. It comes after everybody with hatred is what it does, you know, and it takes a hold of you whether you like it or not. I mean, it's so. My thing is I would say is the time is now. I mean, don't wait, you know. No.
call the hotline, you know, call Heartview and book an evaluation. Call your minister,
right.
You know, if you want to make that change, call your doctor.
You know, and the thing is that if you really want to change, you're not going to just try one thing one time. You're going to try something. You're going to go do some research, or like you said, call somebody, get in contact with somebody, because you know what? Addiction affects everybody. There's somebody out there, whether it's your family member, or yourself, or you're a friend, or just because you're a taxpayer. Addiction affects everybody in the community. It doesn't matter who you are. You know what I mean? So my thing is do your research, figure out what you got to do, but don't quit. Don't just try one thing and just because one thing didn't work one time. Try that one thing 5, 6, maybe even a dozen times. You know, you're going to learn something from that. If anything, you're going to learn what not to do. You're still going to learn something. You know what I mean? And then take that and then go on to the next thing. If that didn't work, you know, keep trying different things. You know, like if you really want to be sober, you know, that's what you got to do. You can't give up on yourself. You know, some people expect other people and rely on other people. And that's nice. Some people have that luxury, but you can't do it unless you want to be sober yourself. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Nobody can make you be sober. And my life and everyone who struggles with addiction, our lives are definitely more than worth saving. And I can speak multitudes about how my life is just something that I never even, my imagination can't even fathom the life I'm living now, yeah, because I'm sober. And I know for a fact that if I wasn't sober, I wouldn't be, you know, I'd either be in jail or dead.
Yeah. So what is your life like now? What are some of the things that you're doing now and some of the things that make your life more worthwhile? I mean, we already know helping people helps make your life worthwhile.
That's one thing. I mean, that's priceless. You know what I mean? That is really, that really touches me. And that's something that I really enjoy doing.
You can be a good father.
Right.
So that's,
you know, so I went to truck driving school and I got my CDL. So I'm a truck driver.
Yep.
And, also, I'm real active with my church. I go to church a couple times a week, go to Bible study and, yep, I do that. But also, like you said, I'm a father. I run with Rad on Saturdays. I was running with GYS before they quit for the winter time. Mm-hmm. And, I've actually been in like, I think 6 or 7 races. I just ran my first 10K on a turkey trot. You know what I mean?
And, right. I saw you there.
Yeah. So, and you know, just being sober and just paying taxes, you know what I mean? And it just, I mean, spending time with family and the people that I'm meeting and the connections I'm making, it's just, it really is, it's nice to be able to do something good instead of having to look over my shoulder all the time and worry about something.
Or looking in the rearview mirror, like, you know, any cops following me here?
Yeah.
So who's family today? I mean, besides your daughter, who's family, you know, who's your support group?
So I get, obviously my church, my preacher's invested a lot of time in me with Bible study and, you know, so
you can mention the church if you want to. You don't have to, but
I go to Open Door Baptist on 11th Avenue F.
Yeah,
and the Rad is Rad has been a big thing for me. The guy that actually started it. It's just
and that's Judge David Reich,
right? You know, and for all the legal trouble that I've been in, you know, I always had kind of I had a attitude against law enforcement and state's attorneys and judges and everything else. And I really thought they didn't care, you know what I mean? But for this judge to be doing this and not want anything in return, he really believes, you know, and people can recover and he's really truly trying to make a difference, you know, and that really touches my heart, you know what I mean? So
I do.
I want to, you know, that's a huge support, you know what I mean? And he totally, just by what he's doing, tells me that he really cares. You know what I mean? And it totally made me think differently about a lot of different things, you know, with in particular law enforcement and everything else. And, you know, when you got someone like that supporting you and you belong to a running group like that, it's nice. You know what I mean? And running also, I mean, it's really, for me anyways, personally, I've noticed that it's a healthy outlet for getting rid of stress, anxiety, anger, depression. I mean, it's really healthy to get that stuff out. You know what I mean? And running.
Oh, yes.
Running is it's nice. It helps.
I am addicted to exercise, and that's a good addiction. You know, that's a good addiction, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and we have to take care of ourselves physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. And that's what recovery is all about. You know, who else's family do you have? Brothers, sisters, uncles?
I got three sisters. One who I'm real close with,
my sister. And I met one of your sisters at the event center, I believe.
Oh, at the Reinvented.
Recovery Reinvented, yes.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Yeah, she's a social worker at West Central. I have another sister that's a social worker at West Central as well. And another one works at Lattister. But I had one brother he passed away or whatever. And that's pretty much about it. I got two other kids too. I got a son that plays basketball for BHS and probably one of the better, best basketball player at BHS.
Can you get to his games?
Oh yeah.
Wonderful.
Yep. And I also got a daughter. She goes to Mandan and two great kids, excellent kids. You know what I mean? And nothing like me, which is good in that sense. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they're proud of you now and today for your involvement in RAD and your giving presentations. And I'm sure that you'll be more and more in demand as you travel down this road. You know, what do you think are some of the secrets to your recovery? I mean, we've mentioned some of them: exercise, service, helping others, but maybe going back to your early days of in treatment or in recovery, what were some of the secrets or things you learned right away that helped you enter recovery or that keep you in recovery today?
Well, some of this, I mean, I've been in treatment 7 times, drug and alcohol treatment 7 times, you know, and all the first 5 I was court ordered to go. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying because I was court ordered, I didn't learn anything. I still retained a lot of information.
Sure.
My thing is treatment really, if a person, whether you want to be sober or not, treatment gives you some really awesome tools on how to be sober. I mean, as long as you apply those, what you learn in treatment, you got a high chance of success as long as the desire to be sober is there. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And this last time that I was in treatment, we went through CODEP. And that was something new for me, mm-hmm. and which I learned goes hand in hand with addiction, codependency.
Yes, right.
And
CODEP.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yep.
You know, but for me, my biggest secret is God. That's my secret, and that's really not even a secret because I'll tell anybody, and I just told everybody. You know what I mean?
So yes.
God for me, you know, if a person really is seeking the Lord and wants to please the Lord, you know, doing these things, that's not pleasing to the Lord. You know what I mean? And it just comes by second nature. I don't even have to try anymore. You know what I mean? Since I found God, I quit smoking, you know, just like that, cold turkey, quit smoking, all drinking. And, I don't even drink pop anymore. You know?
Yeah. Amazing. Well, and I like to think you're doing God's work right now. You're here as a volunteer. And you're talking about your life, which takes a certain amount of courage, you know. And so I know your message is reaching a lot of people today. And I told you this half hour would go fast, and we're already there. So, and Joseph, so thanks for being here. Our guest was Joseph Johnner. And we usually close the program with a serenity prayer. So if you would pray that with me. And so, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. The courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.